Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We also welcome back to the show Dr. Ann Tice. She's a dermatologist at Carl Clinic, and she is one of the local dermatologists who have been good enough to give us some of their time over the years to talk about skin and skin care. And I know here to begin, we'll talk about sun exposure and what you should be thinking about at this time of year. But also say that if you have other questions about skin, I know that Dr. Tice will be happy to try and give you an answer and see if she can help you out. Dr. Jeff was here just the other day, Jeff Swearingen, and just yesterday, in fact, and I said, as I have always said when we have doctors on the program, I said, folks have to understand that we can't diagnose over the phone. There are a lot of things we can't do because the doctor can't see you, but we also do the shows because it is a chance to ask questions. It's a place maybe you can start, ask some basic questions, and of course, if you have real concerns about your health, you have to pursue that with someone who can see you. But this is some place that you can start, and we'd be very happy to take your calls, and I know that she'll do her best to give you an answer. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thanks for being here.
Oh,
I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure.
Whenever we do, no matter who is here, whenever we do the shows in the summertime, I always start by having some conversation about skin cancer and the dangers of sun exposure and what to do about that. And I suppose that's a concern year-round, but particularly in the summertime. We spend more time outside. We expose more of ourselves to the sun. And so I'm sure it's a good idea to kind of review the basics on there.
Well, actually, I have a couple new things this year. There is what I think is the best sunscreen in the country right now is one by Neutrogena. Now, I don't have any vested interest in any product, so there's my disclaimer. But Neutrogena has a new one with an SPF of 55. And the reason why it's great is because it has a new combination of the products that screen the sun that seems to last longer and stronger than their old products and other companies' products. What's a problem been is we have always had a good screen for ultraviolet B light, but we've never had a really good screen for ultraviolet A, which gets in through window lights, it's in tanning parlors and such. In fact, the Parasol, which is the only other product we had around till recently, only lasts about 35 or 45 minutes outside. So the Neutrogena, it's Ultra Sheer SPF 55, is the best you can get, and I've used it all summer. Good news is that a product I've wanted to use for years but was only available in Canada and Europe is now been FDA approved. It's called Mexoral is the chemical in it, and I'm hoping they'll start picking that up and having it available sometime in the U.S. soon now that's FDA approved.
Okay. So you would say go for the Neutrogena Ultra Sheer with the SPF of
55.
And how once you put that on, how long is that going to be good for? How long frequently should you put it? Should you reapply?
A good point. Actually, if you're sweating or swimming a lot, you should reapply every several hours and make sure you apply enough to begin with. All of us have a tendency to put on too thin a layer. Well, they talk about how you should use like a shot glass full to do most of the exposed area, which is a good portion of a bottle, when I don't think anybody really does that. So, yes, reapply it if you're swimming and sweating a lot.
And I guess the other thing that I always wonder about, and I'm sure that I ask frequently, I'm sure that there are people who probably put sunscreen on if they're going to the beach, if they know they're going to be out on a long hike, if they know that they're going to be out, and yet probably if you're just going to be out and you're going to cut the grass, or you're just going out the front door to go about your business, you know, whatever you're going to do, you know you're going to get some sun exposure. Maybe we should be all putting it on every day.
Well, I guess that's
the question.
Yeah, the Academy of Dermatology does recommend an SPF of a 15, which you can get in many moisturizers and some makeups to be used on a daily basis on the exposed areas, head, neck, and arms. We get a lot of sun exposure just running in and out of the cars. I know I will go outside and I'll think, oh, I'm going to pull this one weed, and then, oh, my goodness, I'm out there for a long time. So I keep I have a long sleeve shirt that I'll just toss on and wear a hat. I usually use a facial sunscreen moisturizer. But if I haven't done a specific sunscreen on my arms, I'll grab that long sleeve shirt, which is very lightweight. It's made for working outside in hot conditions because it seems to be you're always out there longer than you think you would be.
Yeah. And there are some fabrics that, and I don't know how they do this, but there are some fabrics that are treated so that they will help block some of those rays.
Yeah, that's right. You can search online for sun protection fabrics. I know Solombra, S-O-L-O MBRUA, something that's close to the spelling, is one company that does it. And another nice thing is, although this is hard to find, is the Rit Dye Company makes a product that you can toss in your washing machine with your clothes that will make them have an SPF of approximately 30 and last for maybe up to 20 washings. So you could just use your regular shirts then.
Okay. Ann Tice is with us. She's a dermatologist at Carle Clinic. If you have skin care questions, you can give us a call. We have one person here who is ready to go, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we'll start right in here with someone in Urbana and line one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question. My husband has skin tags and all sorts of spots and warts and everything all over his body. And I always get concerned that, you know, he doesn't have them checked out or looked at over time. What would you recommend for someone who, you know, has a lot of things that you need to keep an eye on?
Well, it's always a good idea when you go back to your regular doctor on a yearly physical to point those out. Skin tags are little extra blips of skin, often around the neck and the armpit area and other areas, and they usually are not cause for concern. And then there's all these other miscellaneous things that nature is so kind to give to us after we're 30 or 35. But any of those things, it's hard to describe everything over the phone, but I would, and sometimes men aren't so good about bringing up their health issues, encourage him to say something to his regular doctor so when he goes in for a yearly physical, they look at those also.
They can take a look over him.
Yeah, it's a
all
good
right.
idea.
Yeah, I think that sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay,
you're
thanks for the call. Well, give us the basics. What if you were going to check yourself? And the advice is, again, this is one of those things where people are advised to, you know, keep an eye on. If there's something on your skin that looks sort of odd, it might be a good idea to have it checked out. What should you look for?
Well, that's always a good idea. If you have a question, doctors are happy to take a look at you, and we love it when we can say, oh, no, that's one of those benign spots. But the basics to look for melanoma have always been an A, B, C, D rule. A is asymmetry, in other words, lopsided in color or shape. The border, that would be the lopsided, that's the B part in the shape of it. C is color. If there's more than one color to it, like light brown, dark brown, black. Ooh, we always hate black ones. True black spots I like to have checked for certainly. And then D is the diameter. Often areas, true moles that are over 6 millimeters in size, usually recommend that we're a little bit more cautious with those. They have added a couple new things to it, which made it more complicated to me. One is an E, which they say stands for evolving. Well, now that's just a changing mole. And so if we're not supposed to get true new moles after about 30 years of age, we get all these dumb other brown rough things, which are benign, and it is hard to tell the difference between them. But if you have a true new mole come up on you after 30 years of age, it should be examined. And another thing they made I've always checked for this, but they made a cute little slogan for it is called Ugly Duckling. And that means isn't that great? If you have all moles that are light brown and golly, one is black, then that ought to be looked at. So something out of the ordinary and different from what the rest of them you have.
And in most cases here, are we talking about something, if it does turn out to be cancer, that is going to be localized, it's going to hang in that spot. And so if you come along and you basically cut it off, that should get rid of it?
For most of them, there's three kinds of skin cancers. There's a basal cell, a squamous cell, which are often shiny or very crusty areas that will bleed off and on, then heal. Those is simple surgery is a 96% cure rate. Now, a melanoma is the one that looks like a mole that has different color, shape, or border and may change. Those, the earlier you get to them, the better it is. If you've had something that looks like a black raspberry, big bump that's been bleeding for a couple of years, that's pretty serious, and that can spread throughout the body. But if it's just a new black freckle that you've gotten recently, and it did turn out to be a melanoma, chances are very good if you have it taken out right away that you're going to be okay. But melanomas, they can be a little aggressive. So the earlier, the better, and never feel bad about asking your doctor about something.
All right. Let's talk with some other callers. There's someone else here in Urbana. This would be line number two. They're next.
Hi. I'm calling from Urbana. I'm calling, actually, this is a question about my husband. He has extremely sensitive skin. He has eczema, and he gets it in all kinds of awkward places. Like, he'll get it under his arm, and that just it really irritates him. But the thing that you know, I see is that every day when he wants to shave, especially above his lip and on his chin, even though he uses shaving cream, he still gets those bright red splotches that are very irritating for him. And I didn't know if you recommended something for him, if there's anything that, you know, he could do for that.
Well, there are some products that are marketed to have sensitive skin lines for men, for shaving products. I believe, I'm trying to remember. I think Clinique did, Nivea. So he might try changing to a different product for shaving. Electric razors do a whole lot nicer job if you have sensitive skin. Now, yes, they don't give as close a shave, but if he could get away from the shaving creams entirely, which mostly have a soap or an irritating base, that would be great.
Okay, if so an electric razor?
I would try to going over to an electric razor.
Okay.
And anybody with sensitive skin, I would definitely suggest they use a very mild soap. I'll give you names of a couple. The one our family uses is Oil of Olay for sensitive skin. We get the kind that is not have perfume. Dove has one for sensitive skin. And Cetaphil, C-E-T-A-P-H-I-L. They actually have a cleansing lotion that's the mildest ever.
Uh-huh.
And they have a wonderful moisturizer, which the men in my family actually will use and do not complain about.
And that's for the body, you're thinking?
That's for anywhere.
Okay.
And so limited soap, mild soaps. Don't put soap on all of the body unless you've been out mowing the grass and got peat moss over you or whatever.
Yes.
But very limited soap, and then moisturize every day right after the shower.
Ah, he doesn't do that. Okay, and can I ask one more question? And
sure.
This one is about me. I am 30 years old, and I have some mild scarring from acne when I had as a teenager. And I had started looking into different kinds of treatments for my skin. And I had called a whole bunch of different plastic surgery places. And they had talked to me about microdermabrasions, and then they talked to me about CO2 lasers. But the microdermabrasion doesn't seem very effective, and the CO2 laser seems way more than what I want. Is there something in between the two that I could do that isn't a chemical skin peel, because the downtime on that is too much?
Yes, there is. And is this depressed scarring, so it's...
Yeah, you know, it's blackhead.
It's not just the pink color. They actually have a dip in the skin or a little pitted in.
Yes, they have the dip.
Well, there is. The microdermabrasion has minimal results, according to me. I mean, that's just my thoughts on it, although some people claim more. And the CO2 laser is equivalent to some, or can be close to the old dermabrasions. But there are some lasers in between that are called non-ablative lasers. In other words, they do not make a big old scab on your face for 10 days to 2 weeks.
Right.
Unfortunately, with those, you have to have a series of them, perhaps five, before you get some help.
Uh-huh.
And there's another couple lasers, one called Thermage, I believe. I'm not sure who in the area has that. But that is a mini version of the CO2, where it only does like tiny, tiny bits of your skin equivalent to a CO2, and the rest it leaves alone. So although you get kind of a brownish bronze look afterwards that peels off in 7 to 10 days, it's not as dramatic as having a whole scab all over your whole face.
And that's called Thermage?
Thermage.
Thermage, okay.
No, I've got the name wrong. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, it's Fraxel, F-R-A-X-A-L, I believe.
Okay.
That one is not as good as the CO2. It's a bit more aggressive than the other non-ablatives, but those are middle ground ones.
And is that something that a plastic surgeon would do or a cosmetician?
Oh, not a cosmetician. No, it'd be a plastic surgeon or some of the dermatologists. I'm not sure if the gentleman at Christie Clinic has one of those or not.
Okay.
And I know one of the plastic surgeons in town does have the non-ablative lasers, and they do a pretty good job. Not perfect, but pretty good.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Bye.
So is that something where you would do a spot treatment? You'd actually treat individual spots, or are you treating large areas of skin?
Well, most of the time it's the whole face on these.
Okay.
But, you know, I've had this non-ablative laser at one of the plastic surgeons' offices, and, it makes a couple of my freckles dark, and then they peel off in about 5 days. It's really not a big deal. Most people don't notice. And you can get a little bit of help with wrinkles with that. It will help some dilated blood vessels. It'll help some of the freckles. Not all. I'd say 50, 60% of all those.
Mm-hmm.
But, gee, you know, it's not, there isn't any downtime, really. But you do have to get a series of them, and don't expect a facelift out of it.
Okay. We'll go next to someone in Champaign. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hi. Hello?
Yes.
Hi, I have a question about tanning salons. I see a lot of people going to them, especially around here, and I'm wondering how bad are they actually for you? Are they okay to go to a few times? What are the effects of going to tanning salons on your skin?
I absolutely do not recommend them. We get enough incidental exposure otherwise. I've got an article in front of me now that said melanoma risk linked to sunbed usage. This is a British review, suggests that chances climb to 50% for fair-skinned individuals particularly, that they've got a possible link between melanoma and sunbed or tanning parlors. So, and we know that tanning parlors are associated, just like a lot of outside sun exposure is associated with an increase of the other two kinds of skin cancers also. The other kind of double whammy is that many of the tanning parlors are a high percentage of ultraviolet A light. Well, ultraviolet A, although it's not as strong as B, the regular sunburn light, in giving you skin cancers, ultraviolet A does penetrate deeper into the skin, i.e. it can fry up your elastic fibers and your collagen in your skin deeper, which means you may wrinkle more with that. So I never recommend a sunbed usage at all. I do not see any positives to them. They like to say how it makes you feel better. That may be true. There are some actually tanaholics that they've talked about. Oh, goodness. And the other thing they always fuss about is vitamin D. Well, it takes unless you're perhaps in a nursing home and you're never getting outside, never seeing any sunlight at all, and have a terrible diet, I don't think you really need a tanning parlor to get that. If you take a multivitamin, if you are outside 5 to 10 minutes, that's enough vitamin D that you're synthesizing for your day.
Okay.
So how about that? That was pretty strong.
Well, no, I know, because everybody always says, no, they're fine, it's great.
No dermatologist you ask is going to tell you that they're fine. I can tell you
No, we get all fussed up over that.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Very good. And we've done our bit on behalf of the American Academy of Dermatology. We've officially said, don't do it. Because I think I'm sure every dermatologist I have ever talked to has said, no, don't do it. Don't even just go one time. Just forget it.
We also get nervous because a lot of young people are going to that. And then that gets us even more concerned that young people are getting excessive sun exposures all year long now, not just in the summer.
Well, and it seems to me that I do see a lot of young women particularly who do look like deliberately have been spending a lot of time in the sun, who really by this time in the summer are looking pretty brown. And, you know, you sort of wonder, are they getting the basic advice that everybody is getting about either trying to limit your sun exposure or making sure that you're wearing sunscreen and that they're setting themselves up for some kind of problems later.
It's probably true, but I think people are getting better. I think we finally got the message in a little bit. If you look in Australia, where people just expected to get skin cancer anywhere from age 30 up, a lot of blonde, blue-eyed people, excessive sun exposure there, they've had a massive media push to have people use sunscreens, hats, and protective clothing, and they've actually seen a drop in the skin cancer. I mean, these people just automatically thought they'd all get it, and now they're showing significant changes with just those simple things. Mm. They have trees in the schoolyard for the sun. I think they make the kids wear a hat before they go outside for recess. Yeah.
I was thinking about this not long ago, about the fact that I was just looking around, and I realized in the summertime, almost no one wears a hat. Not even guys who you see a lot of time, guys wearing ball caps, at least. Even in the summertime, even they're not wearing that. And I started to wonder, well, if you wore a hat with a brim, a kind that where the brim went all the way around, like people used to, you know, like all men used to wear hats, whether that would make a big difference in the amount of sun that at least ended up on your face and on your neck.
It does, because that's the main area that we get it, is on the forehead, the tops of the ears in men. I see a lot of skin cancers and precancerous areas there, the upper cheeks and the nose. And if you wear a hat with a brim, oh boy, you know, back to Jimmy Stewart glamorous days, that would be helpful. A lot of the gardeners in my gardening group, I'm a master gardener and love that, they have some pretty good hats out there, actually. They have a nice brim. And I always wear a hat or at least a grab a visor or something like that.
Yeah. And I expect also probably that a lot of people, when they're putting on sunscreen, they put it on their arms, they put it on their neck, they put it on their face. They don't put it on their ears.
It's the tops of the ears. That's a big area I always check for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
I wanted to mention something else, though. Some new reading I've done. I recommend all my patients take a multivitamin every day. I also tend to recommend they take vitamin C 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day, just because that's good inside and outside for the skin. But there were a couple new reports, which I actually believe in. I wait till there's good science behind things. And a few reports in melanoma patients and in people that have had an organ transplant who tend to get a lot of skin cancers, drinking green tea may be beneficial to them. Now, unfortunately, I can't say how much, what brand, but I have been recommending to people to take green tea. Keep in mind at least 2 cups a day. Don't go overboard, but keep in mind that that does have caffeine. 2 cups of green tea or 2 of the green tea pills from Walgreens will be equivalent about 2/3 a cup of coffee, so don't take it before you're going to bed at night in the caffeine amount. Mm-hmm. But the polyphenols in the green tea seem to be helpful. There's a couple articles about helping internal cancers and also skin cancers.
It is possible to get it decaffeinated, but I guess what I have read, there's some question about whether that is as effective, whether it does what it does.
If it's taking out the polyphenols, yeah, which are the good guys, the strong antioxidants. So yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk to somebody over in Vermilion County. This is line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a 2-year-old surgical scar on my abdomen that still itches. It's kind of spread, and it's got a dark line. It's almost like very thick tissue. And I wonder, is there any product that can stop the itching? I've tried all kinds of hand creams and
yes,
things.
I'm thinking probably that's either a hypertrophic or a keloid, and those are very common after surgery. Sometimes it'll even happen after a minor thing such as an acne pimple. But typically what you'll get is a raised scar. It may be a darker color, more reddish, and it often is itchy, particularly when it's active and forming more fibrous tissue. There are a few things you can use. I'm hoping I'm right, it's Curad is the name of the company. I think they have a product called Scar Ease. And what these are little packages of silicone in a rectangle. You cut out a strip of the silicone, it's like a sheet, a little thin sheet, and just stick it on over the scar. If you keep that on 24 hours a day for several months, it may help flatten it out some. The other thing that works much quicker and is a bit more reliable is something we've done for many, many years, and that is to inject a tiny dose of cortisone right into that. It's not enough to make your body do anything weird with cortisones otherwise, but we inject it right into that little line of scar, and it'll thin out that skin. It will not change the shiny appearance. It may not do a lot for the pink color, but it'll flatten it down, and it'll tend to make the itching go away and try to make it just squelch it out for a bit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. We're at our midpoint, and we'd be happy to take other questions. Our guest is Dr. Ann Tice. She is a dermatologist at Carl Clinic. So anything that has to do with skin, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We want to talk about aging and skin, something that is of particular concern, I'm sure, to women, but, you know, not just to women. Nobody likes looking old if they can possibly do anything about it.
Oh, I love that topic now that I'm older and over 50. I can't wait for my 10% off discount when I turn 55 in a week. So anyway, but yes, the best thing is sunscreens. I can never say that enough. The second best thing is the prescription product called Retin-A, or there's two versions of it. One is made specifically for wrinkles, and that prescription product is called Renova, R-E-N-O-V-A. Those are exactly the same. That is better than anything else still on the market. Those will slow down skin cancer formations, or at least precancerous areas. They may help wrinkles after you've used them for 9 to 12 months. They can make some of the freckles less noticeable. So those are by far the best out there. The next thing would be over-the-counter products, but unfortunately you probably have to either get them online through a doctor or locally through a doctor. And I like a product called MD Forte, F-O-R-T-E. That's available, I guess, through our office in Carl. I don't make any money off this, so I don't care where you get it. But I use that myself because the Retin-A just irritates my face too much. And then another product that's newer, perhaps in the last year and a half, again, you can only get through doctor's offices, and darn, it's expensive. But it's a product called C, capital C, capital E, because it has vitamin C and E in it. And the last name is Ferulic, F-E-R-R-U-L-I-C. That has great antioxidant capabilities, and you put it on in the morning, it may prevent the sun from doing its damage. help wrinkles a teeny bit, not as much as Retin A, but it's very good for the skin too. And those are the three top products I recommend. Yes, there's other ones with CoQ10 and copper and green tea extracts and a myriad of things. But the Retin A, the MD Forte, and the CE Frulic, I think, are the best three. You can't use everything. You'd be doing that all day.
All right. Let's talk to someone in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Line one?
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, I am out in the sun all day, all summer long, and I start out after my bath in the morning with a 45 SPF sun lotion.
Great.
But I don't. Is that sufficient? Do I need to reapply it? I just don't know if that's... I don't seem to be getting a sunburn.
Well, I applaud you greatly for already doing that stuff. That's fabulous. But yes, if you're sweating, and oh my goodness, it has been hot off and on this summer, if you get a break, they say if you can, to reapply everything every 2 to 3 hours if you're sweating a lot. And I would recommend that. And that's a pain. And
how
I would,
many hours? Excuse me?
How often do you reapply?
Oh, every 2 to 3 hours, if you're sweating quite a bit. Next time you go back to buy a new bottle of sunscreen, I would ask you to look for that Neutrogena SPF 55 because of its combination of chemicals they call helioplex that lasts a little longer. But do keep in mind that all sunscreens are just that. They're screens. They either have big holes or little holes, but they still do let a little bit of light through. If it works out that you can use some long sleeve shirts that are lightweight or a hat, that would be great too. But I just getting up and using a 45, I'm already proud of you for doing that.
Well, I have to. Otherwise, I'd get toasted.
Yeah, I do too. I'm out a whole lot gardening a bit, and I follow my own advice. But I have to say I'm a bit embarrassed. My arm's a little tan. My face isn't too bad. My arms are. But I've been doing everything I'm supposed to. So, okay, do the best you can.
And then use these products you just talked about, the CE Ferulic or the...
Well, if you're thinking that's for aging skin, the Retin A would be best for aging skin, but you would have to get that prescription through a doctor. The MD Forte is also good. The CE Ferulic, I think, would probably be my third choice, although I think it's a great mix with either the Retin A or with the MD Forte. But that stuff costs about $128 a bottle. And believe me, you could probably get by with using that every other day because it will stay active in the skin up to 3 days. But it comes with an eyedropper. You don't want to use too much. That would be my third choice, but I would like the first two better for simply aging skin.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
All right, thank you. And those are things where the recommendation would be for a daily application?
Most of them. I think the CE Frulic would be the one that you could use every other day, save you a little bit of money.
Okay.
But supposedly maybe 5 drops does the whole face.
All right.
It's still expensive.
I think people probably also have this idea, whether it's true or not, that as they go through the summer, if their skin does darken as a result of sun exposure, that somehow that's kind of a natural sunscreen, and that as they get darker, that they can then have more sun because the skin has darkened in response to the... I mean, is there anything to that?
That's a vicious circle. The skin produces a tan as a protective mechanism, so that part's right. But it doesn't mean that you should then stop using sunscreens. For the people that insist on becoming tan and they want it, I mean, I don't recommend that. But if they, like some of the teenagers come in, they're so proud of their tan, I'm going, ugh. I tell them, yes, still keep using a sunscreen, and please keep using a very high number of sunscreen because it takes very little sun to maintain that tan. Mm-hmm. Once you have it, it's going to stick around. But I still recommend the sunscreens all summer, and if you can, at least on the face and exposed areas throughout the year.
Is there, for people who really like, who for whatever reason think that it's more attractive to have a tan, there are cosmetic ways to do it.
Get the fake tans.
They're like dyes that you...
Those are great.
You put on. So does that actually...
some spray-on places in town that do the spray-on. Those are fine. There's no toxicity to that. I'd much rather have you have a fake tan than anything else. And some of the creams that you buy are so much improved over the old things that made you look orange like a carrot. I think a new improvement in some of them, the products, the self-tanners, are they'll have a color to them. So when you put them on, you can see where you put them. And a couple hints on that, areas like the knees or the elbows, if you can exfoliate a little bit before and maybe put a little bit of light moisturizer on before you put the fake tanning on ahead, then those areas won't darken up as much.
Right. And it actually looks, I guess my feeling about those things in the past, that for whatever reason, either because the color was odd or something about it just didn't, it looked like, sometimes you see people, it looked like they've been dipped in walnut stain. It just somehow, it just wasn't right.
The newer ones are good. Right. Yeah, okay. I've almost chewed out a couple patients because their legs were so tan, they wanted to cover up their varicose veins, and I understand that. No, those are fake tans. And one of our dermatologists, I miss him. He was a great guy at Carl, but he moved. He went to the one of the places that, and he got a spray on tan. I said, gee, did you come back in Florida? He goes, no, this is a fake tan. I'm going, whoa, it looks great.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Well, people can try it out. We can also take some more questions here. We'll go next and talk with someone in Chicago on our line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
It's a general question about testing. I'd heard that there's an announcement last week on the television about a photodynamic method of treating skin conditions. Had you heard any good promises about it?
Yes. I wonder if you're referring to, it's a product that you put on the skin called Luvulan.
And then you expose it to another.
And then you expose it to either a certain type of light, like a blue
laser,
light, or most likely to different types of lasers.
And has the response been favorable to your...
Yes, pretty good. This is used for a few things. It can be used for aging skin, but the most common use is for precancerous changes, where they'll put this thing called Luvulan on, which makes your skin much more sensitive to certain types of light, and then shine or go over the skin with a laser, and it will highlight a lot of the precancerous areas and treat them. You do need to kind of be out of the public for maybe a healing time on some of those for a week and a half or so. But it's another way to treat precancerous areas, or it has been used for aging skin also. The downside is that medicine stays a little bit active on your skin for 2 days, and you're supposed to stay out of the sun completely and not sit near a window for those 2 days.
Another question is on the in this month's Prevention magazine, Dr. Weil had a question about dogs sniffing out cancer. Had you heard any or had any experience in about that matter? The dogs had 80% to 90% effectiveness in sniffing out cancer of sorts.
Now, I think that comes from several years ago, and if I remember right, it may have been a beagle that just by happenstance they noticed that it seemed to be fairly accurate in sniffing out melanomas. But I don't believe there's a whole bevy of dogs out there trained to do that. My understanding,
Florida, University of Florida.
Yeah, I know they were doing some research on it and trying to train them on it, but it's certainly not in common use, but it's a fascinating idea.
The last thing on testing, I heard in England that they do have an apparatus that is like 100% in being able to detect cancerous conditions. This is about a year or so ago.
Skin cancers or what? 100% would be a biopsy.
Yeah.
There are some scopes called dermatoscope that they're getting much better. They magnify it under oil. And then they run a bunch of numbers on it, and if it comes out to a certain number, then it's more probable. However, for most of the physicians in the country, if you really think something is suspicious, then it's best to biopsy.
Mm-hmm. Last item is, are magnets in any way, shape, or form applicable to controlling or handling a cancerous condition?
Not in my field. Not.
Last question about sunscreen. I've heard that when you apply sunscreen, it sort of blocks out the effectiveness that we're seeking from the sun for vitamin D conversion.
Well, see, that's what I was mentioning earlier. And you still get some sun through. You don't need much sun. And if you take a multivitamin or get a good glass of milk with vitamin D, that's a little bit overdone. Although you will find people saying different things.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Still a good idea to wear sunscreen.
All right, let's go to line 1. Champagne. Hello.
Caught me off guard. Sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I've got two questions. The first is a simple one. If a little is good, more is better, what would be the reason that you would use a low-value sunscreen?
Well, I think those are nice to use for people that have darker complected skin to begin with. They may not need a really high number. So if you have a deep brown skin normally, and in the wintertime, the American Academy of Dermatology says, well, you only need a 15 or up. So that would be some of the uses for it, or if you're not going outside very much. My theory has always been I'd like to, myself and my family, use a 30 or up just because I know the tendency for people is to not put it on thick enough. So I'll go ahead and use the highest number I can find.
So there's no bad effect of using a larger number than you need.
I don't think so, not particularly. You know, there are a few people that are allergic to a couple of chemicals, and they may be a little bit stronger percentage in the higher numbers, but for most of the general population, no.
Okay, the second, you're familiar with the spot clinic?
Yes, I started those about 7 years ago.
Okay.
That was IME.
You're probably well aware that the overhead in getting an appointment, you know, all the paperwork, getting there, waiting, and
they're a little different than when I ran them, yeah.
So, but when I went, I had three spots that I wanted to look at, but the rule said you could only, they could only look at two. And when I went in, of course, the dermatologist or whoever it was, you know, it took about 30, 40 seconds. He looked at one, 30, 40 more seconds. He looked at the other, and I'm out of there. And I'm thinking, you know, with all that overhead, what's another 30, 40 seconds to look at a third spot? So that I'm just questioning the rationale of that, and I'll hang up and let you.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. I started those a number of years ago, shortly after I was, like, the only dermatologist at our clinic. And I actually would look at everyone, whether they wanted it or not. I asked them if I could look at everybody waist up, and I would find, like, gee whiz, on one person that came in for a benign spot on her cheek, I found three skin cancers on her back. But I'm not doing those anymore just because my practice is so busy and I've cut back hours. So I know the other person running them now has a little bit different tack. We are short of dermatologists in the area. And so I think in order to get the most number of people through, then he has limited it. But that's just kind of his choice. So I'll stop at that.
Any doctor, at least say if you go to for your routine exams, and hopefully people are doing that if they're going to, say, a family practice doctor, if you have a spot that you're concerned about, you should be able to say, Doc, look at this right here. What do you think about that? And they should be able to tell should they not be able to tell whether it's a problem or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's always something that's important to do with your regular physicals, or if you do have something that's changed, get a hold of your primary care doctor, because many of them are excellent in picking up possible problems too. And it's a nationwide problem that we're short of dermatologists. There just aren't that many.
Yeah. Are we going to start seeing more? Will we be seeing more skin cancer problems in the future, even though we seem to be making some progress into making people aware of it and getting them to cover up and wear sunscreen? Having said all that, do you think that as time goes along, we're going to see more and more?
I think probably, yeah, because, the big sun-seeking generation is probably my generation. I'm mid-50s, and I just bake myself as much as I could when I was a lifeguard. And it's often skin cancers appeared 50s on up. Well, now they're starting earlier because we have more people trying to seek the sun, even though we do have better protection things. No, I think it grows. And the skin cancer amount grows every year. Now, half of all the new cancers diagnosed per year are skin cancers. So, yeah, it'll probably go up. There's a lag effect.
All right, we've got about 10, 12 minutes here with Dr. Ann Tice. She's a dermatologist at Carl Clinic, talking about skin issues. If you have a question, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We've been talking a lot about skin cancer issues and sun exposure issues, but you don't have to confine yourself to that if you have something else, as long as it's about skin. I know she'll do her best. And we'll talk here with someone in Urbana. Line two.
Good morning.
Yes.
My question has to do with my two Chinese granddaughters, both of whom have extremely sensitive skin. I don't know if it's eczema, psoriasis, what, but can you give me some general information about how to deal with that? Their mother doesn't give them as many baths as you might some kids, for example, seems to help, but there seems to be nothing that keeps it from cropping up.
Eczema, particularly childhood eczema, is really a difficult thing to deal with. Not everyone outgrows it, but kids can improve with age, but I will not promise it'll go away. But the basics of anything for sensitive skin or dry skin is a very mild soap, that oil of Olay for sensitive skin, do not get the scented one. Limited soap, armpits, face, bottom, and feet only. Do not soap up the arms and legs unless they were out making mud pies. Moisture.
Well, getting sunscreen off, for example, is an issue.
Doing what?
Getting sunscreen off is an issue as far as, you know.
But stick with the mild soaps. You might even try the Cetaphil cleanser.
Because that's
one of the mildest.
That's what she uses.
Warm water, not hot. Never any bubble bath. Short baths, not long, or showers, whichever way.
Yeah.
Within a minute of getting out of the tub or shower, get a moisturizer on. I do like the Cetaphil. If they're really dry in the winter, you want to go with a greasier product such as one's called Eucerin.
Yeah. Sounds like she's doing almost everything.
Right, and it's tough to keep up with them. The other thing I will try, and this is the only thing available over the counter, is a 1% hydrocortisone. That's a cortisone, and that is safe to use on kids unless you're going through buckets of it in like many, many tubes. The ointment is greasy. It's more of a Vaseline base, but it's better than the cream. And then, doggone it, you might have to get into something like the prescription products. Now, there were some new products made for eczema for sensitive skin people, and they have ceramides in them. That's ceramide with a C-E. There was a new product I saw at Walgreens called CeraVe, C-E-R, and then V-A. They were promising that that's going to be a great moisturizer. And I don't know if it was a lot better than Cetaphil lotion when I tried it out, but you could also consider trying that. It's supposed
C-E-R.
To be C-E-R. VA, CeraVe. And that was the that was a new idea within the last year. There's another cream, I don't remember its prescription, called Mimix, M-I-M-Y-X. And you might ask the pharmacist about that. That was another one they were saying that may help particularly kids with eczema. It's not, doesn't have any cortisones in it, but it's supposed to replace and be more helpful for the skin. But I thought maybe my regular moisturizer, Cetaphil lotion, did just as good. But you could give it a try.
Well, the older one is doing better.
Good.
That is encouraging. But the two-year-old still gets bad breakouts, especially on her legs.
Yeah, it's hard to deal with. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your help. Thank
you.
You're most welcome.
Bye-bye.
And we could certainly take a few more. 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Is there still some controversy going on surrounding Accutane, the prescription medicine for acne, and whether, in fact, anybody should be using it or not?
Well, there's still annoyances with it. There are increasing annoyances. I still believe it's an excellent medicine. It's had a long track record. It was released October of 1981 or 82. That's been a long time. But the concern by the FDA was that there have been some people get pregnant while on it. Well, that can have a devastating effect. Doesn't always, but it can. And so the surveillance and the ability to give the drug has been made extremely difficult with that in mind. Even the guys that take it have to register centrally before they can get a prescription. The prescriptions have to be filled within a few days of the office visit. They're making it so many regulations with it. It's very, very difficult to put a person on it. But do I still believe in it? Yes. Would I still use it again in the two sons? I did use it on my two sons. I have two sons.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would do that again if they were in the same situation. But it's really gotten complicated.
Yeah. So is there, the concern is that the boys would somehow give it away?
Oh, I don't know. They decide they'd make it the
it's
same.
It's not going to affect them because they can't get pregnant.
It's the same for everybody. All patients have to be registered. The doctors that give it have to be registered. The pharmacists have to be registered, and there's many, many rules.
Yeah. Now, this also, am I remembering right that there's the possibility it can cause some liver problems, and so you check people periodically throughout the time that they're taking it?
Yes, that's always been there, but I've never seen it, and I was involved with the initial studies in it before it was even released. I do check liver tests, though, on it, and I don't think you ought to go out and have a whole bunch of other medicines that are cleared through the liver either. You shouldn't drink or eat a bunch of Tylenol when you're taking it. Shouldn't drink real heavily when you're taking it. So go easy on that.
All right. Well, we have some other callers here. We'll see if we can get them in all. DeWitt County is next, line one. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I had a question. We've got two teenagers and fighting the acne problem. You see infomercials on TV about this proactive solution, or is that worthless, or what is a good...
It's actually okay, and why didn't you and I invent that? Because it's the same ingredients that have been available without a prescription for years, and they package it nice, and it's attracted to the teenagers. Basically, what it has in there are some benzoyl peroxide. You can get that without a prescription, a 5 or 10% over the counter. Some of them have salicylic acid in it, and some of them have glycolic acid in it, and all those are over the counter. So I have had some people get success with that. Do you have to buy that product? No. You could get other things if you knew what you were looking at in the drugstore.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Indiana next, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Psoriasis. I'm 60 now, and I've had it on my legs. It's kind of calmed down there. And I've got it on my forearms and sides of my hands. It's to where you'd just like to rip your skin off. Can you touch yourself and spread it, or does it just come out on you?
If it's regular psoriasis, no. And it's not contagious to someone else. Psoriasis, there tends to be a genetic basis for it, although you won't always see it in your past relatives. And it can do strange things, like it can start in early adulthood after a bad strep throat. But no, it's not contagious. The same things for moisturizers would apply to you, and there are a number of, I think, good and safe prescription surface creams that can be helpful. There's a new one that just came out that's a combination of a vitamin D3 cream and a cortisone, which a lot of people like, but is not on the formulary for everybody's insurance plans. It's a good one, though. It's two things we've already used.
Okay. Yeah, I've always had something. I can't pronounce it. It's FLUOCINONIDE.
That would be flocininide, and yes, that's a cortisone, and that's a good product. You don't want to be putting that on normal skin a whole lot because it can thin out the skin with weekly, monthly usage, but it's perfectly appropriate to use on the areas of the body, not the face, but on the body psoriasis.
Okay, and this other product is something the doctor has to prescribe to?
Yeah, why don't you ask about Dovonex, D-O-V-O-N-E-X. That is the vitamin D3 cream, and that can be helpful. You could use that along with your flocininide, or a company has made a combination of a regular cortisone and the ingredient in the Dovonex and put them together. You could just use the one product. But if you already have the other stuff at home, then maybe just ask for the Dovonex. Dovonex is expensive.
Okay.
But it's good.
All right.
Well, thank you. Back to Champagne, and this would be line 2. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who was treated with dry ice for acne.
Yeah, I liked that. I got it in college. Dry ice is just that, dry ice mashed up, usually put with some acetone and sometimes sulfur to make a slush. It looks like kind of feels like a stinky snow cone when you put it on your face. But what it does is it'll tend to dry up the surface pimples that you have now. I've used it for years and years and years on patients. It's good, like before prom, if somebody has a flare on their front and back. Does it last forever? No, but it's a nice thing if you happen to have a temporary flare, and it'll tend to calm things down. It doesn't work on everybody, but it's a nice product.
And she had to have it monthly for years.
Oh, well, I know I had it...
Her will.
Against her will.
Yeah.
Weird.
Her parents made her do it.
Well, if it was truly dry ice, I don't... No, there were different things that were used many years ago.
You said it was a swab?
Yeah, it's like it'd be put on with a gauze pad. It's typically helpful for many people, not all. And I had it on myself in college because I had flat warts on my chin, and they didn't want to do anything that would scar. And it made me happy because it tended to help my acne then, too. So I think it's a good product or a good thing.
Not like permanently harmful or anything?
Boy, not that I know of.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right. And Rantoul, this line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly recently, I had a number of skin cancers removed. Some were basal cell, some were, one especially on my leg was something that they said spread, but it was not melanoma. However, the one I wanted to talk about, I had a small sore on my forehead, which I kept letting go. I knew there was a problem, But it didn't heal for, I guess, almost 2 years. I thought, okay, time to do something. But when after it was removed, I got a call from the office saying that they examined whatever they removed, and they could tell that there were others there. Now, there's nothing there that's visible. How can they tell that this is something that is going to spread, or that there are others possibly beneath the skin or something? I don't know. They didn't.
What was the diagnosis on that?
It was just a basal cell.
A basal cell. Okay.
Yes.
I'll give you my best guess on that because I'm a little hazy on what went on. But there are some type of basal cells that are very well confined. They're kind of like an egg sitting in the middle of the skin, and you just take that little egg out, you're done. There are others that are called multifocal, and they seem to have little budding areas coming down under the on the biopsy. When you look at the biopsy, a lot of little budding areas, so they get concerned that maybe it isn't very well circumscribed or very well isolated like the first type I mentioned. And so that might be what they're talking about if it's multifocal. Although, really, if they've taken it out and they've checked it under the microscope, they should be able to tell you if the margins were clear or if they were not clear.
Well, they didn't mention that on the phone.
You know, I might ask them about that, ask the pathologist to take a look at it and make sure the margins were clear. We usually like to see...
That the margins were clear.
Clear, yeah. We usually like to see a little bit of space of normal skin around whatever area that we take off.
Mm-hmm.
And the pathologist should be able to pull it up and recheck it if they didn't comment on the first biopsy about that.
Well, let me tell you, having something removed from your forehead is not the most pleasant thing. I said the shots were worse than the actual, skin cancer removal.
It's uncomfortable.
Yes. All right. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Well, we are just about at the point we need to finish up. Is there anything last thing that you'd like to mention other than, yes, wear your long sleeves, wear your sunscreen, wear your hat, and really be serious about that. And then if you think you got a problem, don't wait 2 years.
Yeah,
get somebody to look at it.
And doggone it, I know we don't have enough dermatology services in the area, but check with your primary care doctor if you're having a hard time getting in. I ran a couple free skin cancer screening clinics. So one was from the Master Gardener program, and the other was at the Mettler Center. I hope to do two in the future. I don't have them set up at two of the nursing homes. But, it is difficult sometimes to be seen, but please at least check with your primary care doctor.
All right. Dr. Ann Tice, she's a dermatologist at Carl Clinic. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.